This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and today I'm joined by JT and Elizabeth Kraft. Hello, guys. How are you?
Hello.
Good. How are you?
Nice to see you. Now, you are not only hearing aid specialists, but you are occupational hearing conservationists. What is that?
That is a certification that we can receive by just getting additional training so that we can help businesses establish hearing conservation programs or plans. You know, when there's high noise levels in industry, they need to have conservation plans in place, and we can help with that. The reason we've chosen to get the certification is not so much for that application as it is educational. We want to help our clients when we're helping people that come in for hearing aids. But if we're lucky enough to catch someone, you know, that isn't yet needing hearing aids, and educate them on the dangers out there for hearing loss, and if there's a way to prevent it, that's why we chose to get that certification. So it's just a training that allows us to know the implications of high noise levels and statistics associated with that, so people can protect themselves.
So my dad started Evia Hearing in the 90s, and he has profound hearing loss, and he was always so on top of me as a child. If it's too loud, you know, you have to take those out of your ears, take those headphones off, and it was super annoying as a child. But looking back, I understand he has always been education driven. And he kind of created our company to be that in this community. Like, people can come ask questions and get the resources that they need to take care of themselves for optimal wellness. And so hearing conservation, even before it was a certified, you know, addition to your licensure, it's always been important to us.
And that's a great segue into the topic we're going to talk about today, which is hearing headphones, either, you know, headphones or earbuds, which we're very familiar with, and the impact that can have. And we know that our younger populations, our kids, tend to be using them more than we are. Obviously, when you've got the headphones on yourself or the earbuds in, you can't necessarily tell how loud they are. So we're going to have a conversation about that. But first of all, I'd just like to ask you, if you lose any level in your hearing, whether it's high or low frequency or whatever it is, can you get that back? Is it always gone?
Not always, but most of the time. Well, I'll go into it a little more deeply. So the most common hearing loss type is what they call sensory neural hearing loss. It's in the cochlea, and there's these little hair-like receptors in our inner ear, the cochlea, that are called stereocilia, and they get damaged due to a lot of things, but in this case, you know, we're referring to noise damage, and that is where noise causes damage. So there are types of hearing loss that can come back, you know, but I would say, since we're talking about noise today, when you've subjected yourself or somebody else has, you know, whether it was purposeful or not, if you've been exposed to high noise levels, some of that damage is there forever. Okay. Let's put it that way. It usually comes back to a degree, but I'll just jump into it. The easiest way to tell that you've done likely some permanent damage is something called a noise hangover, real technical term. But it is a, you know, when you leave the concert, for example, you've been wanting to see this band forever and you went and you had a great time, but at the same time, why does my head hurt? Why do I feel like, you know, I'm underwater? So that dulled hearing, and of course the heightened ringing, that's a noise hangover. And when you experience a noise hangover, you can pretty well guarantee that you lost a little bit of hearing. It may not be necessarily measurable in that moment, or, you know, but when we do that over and over again, especially daily, eventually it can cause severe to even profound hearing loss. So,
Gosh, you can have like 30% to 50% or something of hair cell damage before it's even recognized on a hearing test. So you can have like a threshold shift before it even shows up as a hearing loss.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is you want to try and preserve your hearing. It's not something that you can reclaim. So it's not like, you know, a muscle deteriorates and then you can kind of work it back to strength. You need to keep what you have.
You need to keep what you have, and you're right. You don't get it back, I mean, is the bottom line. And the real danger is how sneaky it is. Mm-hmm. It's imperceivable each time, and it happens so slowly that this is my term, but I call it de-acclimation. Mm-hmm. So it's you're getting used to something, even though it's not correct. And that's the big challenge we have with is people don't necessarily realize they have a problem, but they have a severe high frequency hearing loss, just seems normal to them, but has major implications on their quality of life.
Yes, one of which we'll probably talk about in a later conversation, but is isolation. So JT mentioned how sneaky it is. Truly, you are taking baby steps back from your life every time your hearing is damaged. So eventually, you end up in our office, you know, begging for hearing aids, and you're so disconnected from your family, it's going to be so much harder to reconnect and mm-hmm. get back to your life as it was before. So the obvious solution to that is to pay attention to this topic.
Yeah, this education topic that we're talking about.
And so that's exactly what I hope we can have a conversation about now, which is, you know, as parents, our young people, you know, our children and so on, they love their headphones and their AirPods and their earbuds and so on. You know, in fact, as parents, maybe we quite like them too, because when they're stuck on their screen with listening to their music and so on, they're not bothering us either, are they? So sometimes it's convenient for us too, but are they actually dangerous? Because you know, you get an amazing, wonderful quality of sound, particularly if you're listening to kind of complex music or something like that, rather than just audio, but spoken word. But, you know, are they dangerous for our young people? Do we even know yet? Have they been around long enough?
So certainly. I mean, so again, one of the purposes of getting this certification is really understanding the noise level implications. So what we use is kind of our gold standard is the NIOSH standard.
NIOSH
is, I'm going to have to think here for a second, is the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, I believe.
Okay.
And they're kind of the strictest, but I believe the most accurate standard for, you know, hearing conservation. And so they have these levels that we call a time-weighted average. And this is really the thing that people should focus on. So the longer we're exposed, music is kind of continuous. It's nonstop.
And there is some lovely music.
Yeah, there's some lovely music in the background.
Yeah.
But it's kind of continuous, nonstop sound. And so that continuous sound, if you're exposed to a certain decibel level of that continuous sound, it can become damaging over time. And so there's a graph. It's very simple. It's a NIOSH. It's a graph that says if you're exposed to this decibel level for this period of time within an 8-hour span, you have just likely done some damage to your hearing. So
like an interesting correlation there is somebody that's listening to headphones and at 100 decibels, which you mentioned earlier was pretty easy to reach 100 decibels inside.
So we're speaking at what sort of level? What sort of level are we speaking at?
Like
60, 70?
Yeah,
like
a little above
70.
That. 70,
okay.
Yeah. So that's the same as an industrial worker would be exposed to in an 8-hour workday at 85 decibels. Okay. So if you can, you know, make that, you know, correlation in your mind, that makes those headphones and earbuds very dangerous.
So it's
actually
not only frequency of, it's not only the how loud something is that you are hearing, it's the frequency and the duration.
And the duration.
Yeah.
And
which is relevant. And even lower levels of noise can still be damaging because of the duration, the length of time over which you are subjected or put or subjecting yourself to.
Yeah.
So where does that bring us back to earbuds? Because they are great.
Yeah, they are great, and they you know, there's great fidelity, and there's and really, I mean, I'm an audiophile because I'm a musician, so I love music. I love good quality music. So a good set of headphones is hard to beat, or earbuds for that quality. But really what it boils down to for everyday life is that duration. And so when the teen population, we're seeing so much hearing loss. Statistically, 1 in 5.
That's so more than the baby boomers, right?
Right. Statistically, yeah. Baby boomers, 1 in 6 have hearing loss. And that's as of, you know, these current statistics, 1 in 5 teenagers show some form of hearing loss. And they're attributing a lot of it, a huge portion of it, to, you know, this kind of earbud and headphone situation.
So let me just stop you there for a minute. I just want to be really clear that I'm understanding what you say. So older people, mm-hmm. we also refer to as baby boomers, mm-hmm. you would expect with age comes deterioration. Maybe also we didn't take such good care of our audio health as we did in the past.
Yeah, lack of information
exactly,
and education. Sure.
And so on. So we would expect maybe their hearing not to be as good as... But you're already seeing that high numbers in teens. Already.
Yeah.
And I assume that that data probably is not very complete, because how many parents even think that their teen has a hearing issue, and we're not on a spectrum where, you know, you go and get your eyes tested, you know, you may have a physical for athletics, but you certainly never, we don't hear anything about audio health, and I hope that's another conversation that we can have. But so there are a number of teens who are already experiencing hearing loss in their teens.
Right. And you know, the statistics that I've seen and we can post that, but it's, you know, it's, it was kind of meant to rattle the cage a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. When we put these side by side, when you have a group of retirement age people that have 1 in 6, have hearing loss, which again, you would expect that, the one that was very surprising was the 1 in 5 teens.
Yes.
And so, you know, what it boils down to is, this, we want to educate. We want people to know that this is a thing, because, like you said, it's convenient. I mean, our kids are quiet. They're listening to music. They don't seem like they're causing any problems. You know, they're just enjoying something that they enjoy, and we don't think much about it. But if they sit there for 2 hours under headphones, even at 95 or 100 decibels. You know, they're subjecting themselves to potential damage. I mean, 100 decibels on the NIOSH standard for time-weighted average, they say a max is 15 minutes at 100 decibels within an 8-hour time period.
And I've seen students with earbuds in their ears all day long, you know, on and off.
So, as, you know, some parents, you know, feel that they need to limit screen time mm-hmm. or certain time on certain apps and so on and so forth. Should parents be adding another thing and limiting earbud headphone time as well?
In an ideal world.
Are there guidelines for this too?
In an ideal world, I think limiting, encouraging rather, outside, like, organic exposure to sounds and life and human interaction is great, you know. But we live in the technological world, and we understand that that's the reality of it, and it's wonderful. I mean, I'm not, you know, technological advances in our world they're outstanding and interesting and creative, and it's awesome that our kids have that at their fingertips. You know, with every pro, there's a potential con too. I think probably a good rule of thumb, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like 60%, if you're looking at like the volume dial, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. just over half is probably where you should.
And so you have children, you're also musicians.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you live in two interesting worlds of, you know, hearing protection, you know, audio expertise and so on. And yet, you know, you understand very clearly, you know, the benefits and the joys that, you know, loud sounds, musical loud sounds can bring, and the practical world of trying to kind of parent kids in this modern age. What are what are you going to apply to your children? What can you manage?
Yeah, so this is where I think it, I mean, it doesn't have to be over the top and all these measurements and things like that, although that does help. Download a decibel meter app on your phone. That's easy.
Readily available.
Yeah, I mean, if the kid's going to go mow the lawn, you want to know how loud the lawnmower is so that you can say, well, you need to wear some headphones or some muffs or earplugs or something.
If that's a really great point. So, you know, kids are mowing lawns this summer or doing anything else and they're working with, you know, headphones or earbuds in. If they crank them right up and they that drowns out the noise of whatever the machinery is around them, is that bad for their hearing too?
So there's a lot of industrial applications that I've seen, even in adults, you know, that maybe navigate this a little better reasonably, but they believe that kind of stuffing earbuds in their ears or having a good sealing headphone is going to provide them with hearing protection, and then they turn on music. The problem is now, if you were to measure both of those things together, even if there's a slight reduction in the noise level of the industrial thing that's happening, when you add music on top of it, it shortens the time-weighted average. So you're actually doing, in most cases, more damage unless you truly have a true earplug, like something that's designed for hearing isolation, so any sort of protective device like an earplug or
electronic hearing protection. So an earplug would put you into a silent or near silent state, so you wouldn't be
adding music,
you wouldn't be entertaining yourself while you're doing that menial task up and down the lawn.
There's some products out there that actually are hearing protection and have Bluetooth. And so when those are used properly, and you don't, the concept is there's enough reduction that you can just add a little bit of music and still hear it. So really back to your question about like, how do we apply this with our kids? You know, it's good to have the tools like a decibel meter and things and just be aware of these things. But also what it boils down to me is an awareness. So your kids are under headphones for a while. You need to go over and take them off and put them on your ears. Just stick them on, and if it's like, wow, that's loud, you need to say, okay, you can't be listening at this volume level. It might be fun, but we need to turn it down. Elizabeth just said, take a break. That's the best thing you can do. Is a lot of times it's hard to control, especially with a teenager. You know, my parents say, turn it down, I'm going to turn it up, kind of thing. Yeah. But it's take a break. The time weighted average is where the damage mostly comes in. So the longer you're exposed to it, the more dangerous it becomes. Yeah. So take a break. Don't do these long durations of subject.
And long is what? I mean,
it.
Gosh, that one statistic was 15 minutes.
Right. So, I think 30 minutes 30, I mean, I'd take a break at 30 minutes and go do something else for at least that long before I went back to the headphones. There's newer articles coming out about how effective breaks are. I don't have very clear statistics or anything about that, but they're proving that breaks are hugely helpful to keeping it from turning into permanent hearing loss.
And honestly, that's what feels intuitive to us. Mm-hmm. Coming from our industry, coming with the KAOC certification and the hearing aid specialist licensure and the musician life of decades, you know, that feels intuitive to us to say, hey, you need a break. And so if nothing else, you can go on that just from our background that feels right for our kids.
So does it make a difference if, you know, you can scooch one headphone off your ear, you can take one earbud out? Does that make any difference at all?
That's a good question. I suppose, the stereo cilia, or there's some for each side, right? So if you were to kind of alternate and be able to actually manage that, I would imagine it would help because you are giving a break to that group of stereo cilia on that particular side. So that would potentially be an okay approach is like, let's run with one and then let's switch. So an example of that is, I've mentioned I'm a musician. I play a lot of live music and I use in-ear stage monitors. They're custom made. They're meant to isolate a little bit, so they provide me with some protection if there's a lot of stage noise, but mainly for fidelity so I can really hear on stage. I usually run with one in and one out since I'm a vocalist and that kind of thing. So I switch. I run one for a while, and then I run the other for the same reason. Because, you know, I have experience from long gigs. If I leave just one in, I get the noise hangover thing we talked about earlier, which, you know, I get that dulled hearing heightened ringing in the one ear, and I'm like, oops, I shouldn't have done that. So if I alternate, you know, throughout the night, I don't get that. So it does help.
I don't always get the ringing or those obvious signs of potential damage. I just feel so tired that when, so I know that if things have been in my ears or on my ears, or we just recently went to NAMM in Anaheim, California, and it was an awesome music retailers convention, and it was incredible. It was very loud. So I knew at the end of, just because of the sheer volume of people that were in there, you know, and at the end of the day, I was just so exhausted. So just, you know, paying attention to your body if something feels off.
Yeah, auditory fatigue, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I think, you know, we're used to the idea, the notion of kind of just being somewhat overstimulated. And sometimes we see that in our small children and we sense that they are overstimulated. Yes. We tend not to think of it as in different types of categories as to whether, you know, it's light or sound or heat or cold or, you know, whatever it is. But to sort of separate those things out may be a good metric for us to start applying.
Yeah, and just about awareness. Like, this is hopefully helpful to somebody, you know, that they can use this and just kind of, it doesn't have to be super particular or statistics driven. Yes. It's just kind of, this is a possibility. It could be affecting your kids. So,
I think a lot of the danger comes in. You know, I think as parents of teenagers, Elizabeth and I are actually
almost there.
we have a almost 6, a 10, and a 12 who will be 13 within this year. So, but I think what it boils down to is, like, sometimes it's just like, what hill am I going to die on right today? Because you know, there's going to be a little bit of conflict. They're going to think I'm dumb about this, that, or the other thing. But what are our priorities, and which ones are we not going to let slip? And I do think we need to be really careful, because the long-term implication of hearing loss as hearing aid specialist, I can tell you, is very big. It affects people's quality of life as much as about anything. And it's so sneaky. We just don't know it. And so many times I've had people come in and they're like, oh, if only I had paid attention more when I was shooting, or when I was in that industrial type environment, or running my table saw in my shop at home. But now this is new, this earbuds and headphones thing. It's almost every kid has something like that. There's so many of these devices out there now. And it's like a lot of things, the technology gets a little ahead of what we know what to do with it. And so we're seeing already these statistics cropping up. So it's just something as parents to be aware of. So, you know, when your kid is quiet and not combative and they're under headphones and you're like, I'm just going to leave them there because, you know,
get it.
Yeah,
we've
right.
Been there, you know.
That's an easy thing to do, but I would say just be extra aware. You know, make sure, just check the volume. Like Elizabeth said, one of the quick things: look at the volume on their phone, see where it's set. But it's hard. I mean, the breaks, I think, are the ones you can actually manage well. I mean, they can turn the volume down, and when you walk away, they turn it back up. Mm-hmm. There was a study done by a guy. It was a high school teacher, science teacher. And as the kids walked through the door, he would take their phone up, you know, they'd say, okay. He's like, it's just an experiment. You're not going to get in trouble. Hand me your phone. Don't adjust anything. And hand me your earbuds or headphones. And he'd rigged up this measurement station for earbuds and for headphones for decibel levels. And so he would push play on whatever they had at whatever volume they had. And he would measure the decibel levels. And then he would go to each kid and say, how long on average do you suppose you listen to these headphones in a day? And so they would give him the information. And you know, I can't tell you the exact statistics of this. I can't remember the specifics, but it was staggering. It was one kid had 120 decibels in his headphones, and he said he runs them like that all the time. Well, I can pretty well guarantee, you know, you keep under those headphones for even 10 minutes at 120 decibels, you're causing damage. NIOSH says 120 decibels. It doesn't even register on their chart. 109 decibels is 1 minute 52 seconds before you've done damage according to their standards. So these are the things. This guy was trying to bring it into a more tangible, like realistic, like what does this actually look like? And the results were staggering. The kids were subjecting themselves, almost all of them, to damaging noise levels according to the NIOSH standard. So something to be aware of, and just taking breaks is the main thing that they say is the most beneficial.
Yeah. And to state something which I think is maybe not patently clear, but you know, hearing aids can go a long way to help you hear again better, but they do not, they're not remedial, they do not cure hearing loss, and sometimes they don't yet work as well as we would like them to be able to. There's been tremendous leaps and bounds, and I know that from my own life and my own family, that the unbelievable difference that good, well-fitted hearing aids can give, but that's, there is nothing like retaining your natural ability to hear.
That,
absolutely.
Incredible, important point. I mean, you know, we work against that all the time, because I think the concept is, well, I can go get glasses, they correct my vision, so I must be able to go get hearing aids and it can correct my hearing. And unfortunately, it's not the case. You think of it as a damaged system. When you used to have, say, in a certain frequency range, let's say you had 500 stereo cilia that were healthy when your hearing was in its, you know, good, healthy state. It's easy for noise to get people to the point where they may only have 100 or 200 functioning healthy stereo cilia in that frequency range due to noise exposure. Well, you can't amplify sound, even well done, you know, prescriptive programmable hearing aids that target those specific frequencies and loudness levels and everything. You can't get the quality of sound through 200 stereo cilia that you could through 500. It doesn't work that way.
Even with the technologies like the frequency lowering technologies, those are amazing, but it's still not.
It's not, it's what I tell people is not as good as what God gave us at all. It's helpful. It's a hearing aid, and it very much improves people's quality of life overall when it's done well and fit properly. But you can't get it back. It just doesn't work that way. So, and again, this is, I think, the point of this educational conversation is that most people don't know that. They don't know what kind of damage they're doing, firstly, and secondly, they don't realize the implication and that you can't get it back. And man, there's a lot of regret associated with that. And as much as hearing aids are helping people and as much as they're improving, it'll never be that good. So, you know, there's hope for maybe some regrowth of stereo cilia someday. But we can't lean on that. We can't rely on that because that, you know, that's a big hill to climb medically. So I think
be proactive.
Yeah, we have to make sure to protect.
So don't abuse it, you might lose it.
Right, yes. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Especially for those young ones, because they've got a long life ahead, and if they've got damage and need hearing aids sooner rather than later, that's just a lot of extra frustration, you know, along the way as they age. And
it is, and it's a troubling road to find yourself on too. So, JT, Elizabeth, thank you very much for a really very informative conversation. I think I need to go back and check on my kids' headphones and earbuds. Slightly depressing, but very illuminating. another set of rules and things to worry about and apply.
Know.
But
yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing this, what is actually incredibly important information to us. So thank you very much.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you for having us.